In every job that must be done, there is an element of fun. Fun, fun,
fun, fun. Light speed to
the wondrous and wonderful.
Cover is not the book, so open it up and take a look.
Ah, if it isn't the only bookworm in town.
What's that word again?
Inspired!
Might solve a mystery or rewrite history.
This is the story we need. It's a right that's been kept out of sight for no more.
So I'll read a book, or maybe two or three. It's such fun to hum a happy working song. Ooh, a happy working song.
I have to sing. I have to play. The music, it's not just in me. It is me.
We're happier when you don't sing.
Welcome to Notably Disney, your ultimate podcast covering Disney music and books. I'm Brett Nachman, your host. Here we dig a little deeper and explore the great wide somewhere about everything under the Walt Disney Company umbrella as it pertains to tunes and writing, from the theme parks and television screens to the Broadway stage and the silver screen, if it relates to anything Disney songs, soundtracks, books, articles, or other things that you can listen to or read about involving Disney, we'll examine it here. The 96th Academy Awards takes place on Sunday, March 10th, and that makes it a perfect time to think about Disney's role with the Oscars. Over the years, many dozens of songs and scores have been nominated, and even a handful have won for their respective categories. Invariably, though, there have been some significant omissions in terms of songs and scores that should have been nominated, along with songs that maybe shouldn't have won or been nominated in the first place. Of course, too, a few great songs missed the opportunity to win an Oscar, even if nominated. And today, longtime guest, author, and friend of the show, Aaron Wallace, returns to Notably Disney as we have a discussion of these topics. So get ready to extinguish some hot takes that we are about to rise up. Thank you for coming on, Aaron.
Hey, Brett. Thanks for having me. And, you know, honestly, I wish that most of my conversations in life were about either Disney songs or the Oscars. So when you contacted me with an idea for putting those two things together, I was like, sign me up. So yeah, I'm sure there's going to be a hot take or two along the way.
Yeah, the idea has been brewing for a long time. And I think there's just going to be tons of references to heat and steam and spilling tea and everything like that. So you, maybe as an entree point to kind of the meat of it, you said you love Disney songs, you love the Oscars. What about, clearly we know that your love for Disney, what about the Academy Awards do you really appreciate?
Well, you know, I mean, I grew up as did you, I don't know, did you grow up watching the awards, Brett?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, like I feel like the 80s, the 90s were a really magical time, really, for award shows in general. It was just this moment where like television production had kind of reached a zenith at the same time that like audience sizes had grown to kind of their peak in terms of awards viewership. And so it was this time where the shows were really great. Just culturally, the output that was being recognized was really outstanding. And the whole world was kind of coming together on awards night watching the same thing. And there was maybe just this period of like 15 years where that was the case. And we were kind of growing up during that time. So I think that for a lot of us, the Oscars and these other awards had kind of a hold on us. And certainly for me, was instructive about what film is and what it should be, or what it could be. And so much of what I understand or feel about the magic of Hollywood was informed by those awards viewing experiences. And what I appreciate about the Academy Awards in particular, relative to something like the Grammys or the Emmys, et cetera, is that I feel like of all the award shows, the Oscar seems to carry the most cultural cachet. Hmm. And I don't know if you agree with that, but in terms of what award do we as a culture look to tell us most definitively that a given work or a given performance is worthy of acclaim and of like historical remembrance? And I think the Oscars kind of stands at the top of the awards mountain, if you will. Is that your sense?
Yeah, I think that's a really just a clear way of putting it, because even in advertising for, let's say, like Meryl Streep, for instance, let's say Meryl Streep is on Only Murders in the Building, they're probably going to refer to her as Academy Award winner Meryl Streep, right? Even obviously she's someone who transcends a variety of media, but just the notion of that's going to, as you put it, cachet, that's going to hold much more weight than if you say Emmy Award winning star Julia Louis-Dreyfus is in this new Thunderbolts film, right? So it doesn't really work the other way around as much because of what significance the Oscars holds.
Yeah, that's a great point. If someone is has won multiple of these awards, or if they're an EGOT, it tends to be the Oscar that is most readily cited. And that may be because it's relatively harder to win an Oscar than these other awards, right? Even just by virtue of the small number of categories. When you look at the Grammys, I mean, I don't even know how many categories there are. I mean, they literally have multiple ceremonies just to hand them all out. And the same is true for the Emmys, and you have a daytime Emmys and a primetime Emmys. But with the Oscars, you have just a very small number of categories, and so it's just that much harder. And within those categories, up until recently, a very small number of nominees for all of these categories. And so, I guess perhaps it's the most competitive of the major awards.
Yeah, and I think perhaps worth noting before we get into it too, there's been a lot of variability to both the song and score categories over the decades, which I had been familiar with, but was reacquainted with that in preparing for our chat, in terms of there was a time in the 90s where there was both best original score for a drama versus musical or comedy. Over the years, with even decades earlier than that, there would be at times tons of nominees, and now there's generally only five for best original score. So there's a lot of changes too, which also adds to the complexity or and the difficulty of certain pieces of music getting the recognition by virtue of how many films were released, how many were eligible, and ultimately how big the pool was.
Yeah, and I believe the criteria for what can be nominated, or even sort of like the guidelines of what voters should look to, have changed over the years as well. And so, yeah, that it does make any kind of a broad-ranging historical analysis a little difficult. But I don't know about for you, but for me, heading into this discussion today, I just sort of said I'm going to flatten all that. Like, I'm not going to get too into the weeds in my own mind in terms of, well, in this year, what were the rules and how did the category break down? And just kind of look at it as best score and best song as a whole.
Yeah, you got it. Me too. Well, let's dive into it. But actually, I keep doing like, and one more thing, and one more thing. I want to ask you a trivia question. All right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm not gonna. Don't worry, I won't judge you if you don't get it wrong. If you don't get
Okay.
it right. Okay. How many Disney songs do you think have been nominated for Best Original Song?
Oh gosh. I mean, I know I won't know the exact number, but I mean, I was looking over the list earlier, so maybe I could just shoot a guess of, like, I don't know, 25. Is that at all in the right neighborhood?
It's actually more than that, and I'm surprised
Okay.
too. 42.
42. Okay, wow.
And I think now it's with an asterisk because do we include like Fox? Like if something is connected to Fox, does that get accounted for? I don't know. Yeah, so
Yeah, and I'm
42.
curious, did you, in formulating your own choices for the categories that we're going to walk through today, are you including Fox, Touchstone, etc., Lucasfilm?
I was wondering that, and I ended up going with Disney proper, so Disney and Disney Pixar. I decided to, I'm reviewing now my choices. I did not go
Okay.
with Marvel. There's very little. Well, no, there could be films that fit there. I didn't consider Marvel or Lucasfilm, or Fox. Touchstone, I didn't account for either, but. Mind you, Disney is encompassing, so all the power to you if you think that should be accounted for.
Yeah, no, I pretty much took the same approach, but in just sort of preparing some notes, I would make little asterisks, you know, where a Star Wars film was nominated, where a Muppet film, even pre-Disney acquisition, you know, it feels germane to the conversation. And then there are these one-off Fox or Touchstone properties that just seem like they have been welcomed into the Disney fold more than others. I think it's something like a Dick Tracy,
Yeah.
which I believe won a song Oscar.
Yeah.
And I think of like Home Alone, which was score nominated. And well, I think maybe even Somewhere in My Memory was nominated as a song. And, you know, that's a movie that we've seen Disney really embrace. Neither here nor there, really, but I just think interesting sort of trivia to note for the conversation.
Even thinking about how Disney Music has expanded their releases so that they not only put out on vinyl products related to Disney Animation and Marvel, but Fox as well. Like, you know, if you go on the website, you can see, you know, the new West Side Story iteration in the form of a vinyl record. So that also just kind of changes our conceptions of what is Disney Music, per, I think, the point you're trying to make.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you have the Star Wars, Muppets, and Marvel movies that are Disney movies proper. And then that begs the question, well, if they can be considered, then why can't the earlier Muppets, Star Wars, Marvel films, especially in the case of something like Star Wars, where the Disney Star Wars scores are hearkening back to and interpolating, incorporating the John Williams scores of the non-Disney Star Wars films. So yeah, it definitely gets all a little hazy.
Yeah, very, very true. Well, let's get into it then. First category. So the notion is Aaron and I are going to alternate in sharing our picks for first in this category, Disney songs that should have been nominated for an Oscar. So we'll each pick two and potentially some honorable mentions. Aaron, what's the first one that you feel like should have been nominated but was not?
Okay, so my first choice was A Dream is a Wish Your Heart Makes from Cinderella. And I'm going to attach a caveat here, which is that I wish it had been nominated instead of the Cinderella song that was nominated, which is Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo. No shade to Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo, obviously, like what an excellent, legendary, all-time kind of a song. But I say instead of, because had they both been nominated, I think there would have been a split of the votes. Instead, it was just Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo that was nominated, and it lost that year. But I think that had A Dream as a Wish Your Heart Makes been nominated, it might have had a better chance of capturing the win for Cinderella. And, you know, with all of these songs that we're going to talk about, when it comes to the Oscars, I'm looking at how essential is the song to the story of the film, or perhaps to the film as an overall artistic work. So it's that question of how critical is this to the whole piece. And I look at something like A Dream is a Wish Your Heart Makes. It frames the whole story. It's kind of the I Want song. I don't think they were using that terminology back in the time of Cinderella, but you know, you think about musical theater, and early on the protagonist kind of articulates this vision for what they want in the form of often a ballad. That's what this is. It's kind of an early example of that in Disney animation. And this is a song that so poetically deals with very big themes. You know, what is a dream? What does a dream mean? What is a wish? What do we want in life? Can our dreams come true? And I think that's the kind of theme that historically the Oscars have gravitated to in this category. So that's why I'm picking it. I think it would have had a really good chance at winning. And I also think it's just one of those songs that the average person would be surprised to learn was not nominated,
especially since it really serves as a Disney anthem, if you will, in the same way as a When You Wish Upon a Star. So it is kind of fascinating to think that it really took on its own life even without that level of recognition.
Absolutely. And, you know, and hindsight 2020, sure, but I think so often when we look back at what is nominated and certainly what wins the Best Original Song Award, the Oscars, the Academy, rather, has often been short-sighted in estimating the long-term impact of a film, because I think so often what won goes on to become kind of a forgotten song. And then you see sort of below the line on a short list or in the list of nominees, a song that has lived on but didn't win the prize. And it's interesting how often that happens. And I think this is an example of that.
Yeah, great point. Well, my first pick is also an I Want song, but from an era where that was very much in our frame of consciousness as a term out there, from The Hunchback of Notre Dame, which is one of my probably all five all-time favorite Disney songs.
There among the millers and the weavers and their wives, through the roofs and gables I can see them.
And it's shocking because this followed what was an unbeatable period for Alan Menken, where he had several consecutive wins, with the exception of a few years when he wasn't connected to Disney films. But I mean, it was, you know, Little Mermaid Under the Sea and Beating the Beast and Whole New World for Aladdin, and then Colors of the Wind, and then nothing from Hunchback, which is such a shame. And that was, of course, Stephen Schwartz as well as lyricist. And so it's just such a travesty that it didn't get any recognition. It's a stellar song. It's, you know, some people at times have criticized Tom Hulce's singing voice, but I think there's such an authenticity and richness to it that I'm an uber fan. And the song has become a ballad, a common piece of music that a lot of young artists in musical theater spheres turn to showcase their range and capture that emotion. It's just a stellar piece of music, and it really baffles me why it didn't even gather a nomination back in what would have been for the 1997 Academy Awards.
Yeah, Brett, I think this is such a great pick. I totally agree. You know, the Hunchback of Notre Dame is just perpetually under-recognized by the Academy, certainly. I think by audiences for so long, by the Disney company. It's only in the past few years that we've started to see the theme parks really embrace Hunchback in a big way, both in terms of merchandising and, you know, so many of the nighttime spectaculars now are utilizing Hunchback music in a pretty big way. But yeah, and I look at the nominated films of that year. So these were, I guess, the films of 96.
That's right. Correct, yeah.
So interesting. It was a Touchstone movie that won that year for best song. It was Evita. That's Touchstone, right? Or was it Hollywood Pictures? One of those. Yeah. You know, it's a pretty stellar year. That Thing You Do was nominated, Because You Love Me, big Celine Dion, Diane Warren song. But I think, yeah, short-sighted. I see I Finally Found Someone by Bryan Adams. No one remembers that song today. Bryan Adams it was Streisand, I guess. I don't know. It was a tough year. But yeah, absolutely, Hunchback should have been a part of this. And I totally agree with you, by the way, as to the vocal performance. Perhaps not pitch perfect, but so authentic. And isn't that what we look for in musical theater?
Yeah, it's it was so joyous when I was in Disneyland Paris last year, and for their nighttime projection show on the castle they utilized Out There. And to see, like, to literally be like an hour away from Notre Dame and to see the projection of Quasimodo on the castle, it had such, I think, cultural significance, but also just it was very meaningful, given the location of being in his home country, if you will, and to be loved in that way. So,
yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I was just there for my first time ever,
right.
Earlier. Well, I guess last year now. And yeah, I felt exactly the same way. I had all the Hunchback Out There Quasimodo feels standing there looking at it.
And I'll tell you, I was so nerdy when, so we were in Paris proper, and we were standing outside Notre Dame, of course, we're recording there. It's still not open to the public. But as we approached the Notre Dame, I put Out There on speaker on my phone, strolling by the Seine, pace the moment, yes. Out there like ordinary men. I was like in absolute bliss. So if that's not the significance of a song and how it manifests in real life, I don't know what is.
Oh, I love it.
What's your next pick?
Okay, so this might be a little surprising. I'm going very recent here with the song Nobody Like You from Turning Red. In 2022, and I even surprised myself a little bit in picking this, because listen, there are a long list of Disney songs that I feel should have been nominated, but I went with this one for a few reasons. First, the roster of folks involved with this song is kind of jaw-dropping. It's very A-list. I mean, the song's written by Billie Eilish and her brother Phineas, who are kind of like, you know, the major players of the music scene today. Among the many vocalists here are Phineas, Jordan Fisher, who's sort of like a Disney legend in the making, Josh Levi, who folks know, I think, from like Friday Night Lights and The X Factor. The song was Grammy nominated, so it did have awards buzz, but for some reason that did not translate to the Oscars. And then I look at this year, what took the place? Why didn't Turning Red make it? And I'm just at a loss. You look at what was nominated, the song Applause, again by Diane Warren from Tell It Like a Woman, which is not a movie that was otherwise in the awards conversation that year at all. And by the way, a little bit of what's going on there is, you know, Diane Warren, I think, is the most nominated person living today in this category who has never won it. And so what you are seeing happen, or what we are seeing happen in recent years, is again and again and again, Diane Warren is getting nominated for kind of forgettable songs because they are just trying to get her a win. And like, listen, I love Diane Warren. She wrote half the soundtrack of our generation, right? But I think we shouldn't be nominating songs for that sole purpose. So that's just my little side tangent. What did win was Natu Natu from that movie Triple R, which it was a very fun song, and I don't begrudge it winning. But anyway, just Nobody Like You. It's catchy as hell. It's just so much fun. It's a knowing song. It's kind of a meta song. It's kind of a commentary on 1990s pop. But more than that, it is so essential to the plot. I mean, it drives the story of Turning Red. And again, that's what I think this award should look to, or one of the things that it should look to. And then I also ask, beyond it driving the plot, does it capture kind of a major musical moment of the year? And because that tells us something about the staying power that it might have. And I don't know, again, when I look at the films of 2022, to me, what did I come out of, like, as a bop, you know, singing in my head after leaving a movie theater? It was this more than any other song that year. So anyway, I've always felt just the last couple, or the last couple of years, that this was a big miss on the Academy's part.
Yeah, that's a really interesting choice, and not interesting in a negative or questionable way, but rather it's one of those rare songs in the Disney catalog that is very much tethered to a period of time, like you're saying, the 90s boy bands, but where it's not from a film of that era, right? Like, I could think of Disney Channel original movie songs of that era that were, like, you know, very much in that style or drawing on bands of that time. But this is a film that's, you know, created two decades later, but is so emblematic of what folks would have listened to and still enjoy today, right? Like, it's contemporary, but it also is a time capsule, and it's catchy, which is such an essential element of a song and its indelible impact in our lives, right? Like, Let It Go was a behemoth because not only is it wonderfully written and sung, but it has a rhythm to it, a vibe that is just, it's an earworm, and this is in that same boat. I think part of what compromised it is the lack of the theatrical release. It was nominated for an Oscar because it was released in, you know, like one or two theaters to be eligible, but otherwise everybody was accessing it via streaming. So maybe voters were not as engaged with it by virtue of the media in which the platform in which they consumed it. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a great point, because we do hear, you know, every year there are these anonymous ballots that come out where folks kind of release their rationale for voting or not voting for things. And there is a clear movement in the membership of the Academy to kind of punish the streaming side of the industry, because there's this fear that it's hurting kind of like the pure or the true or the economic engine of filmmaking. And so, yeah, there may very much have been that at play. Perhaps had Turning Red been given its due with a wide, long-lasting theatrical release, voters would have been more inclined to give this one weight. And honestly, I'm not even sure if it was shortlisted that year. That would be something to look into. And maybe we note here that that's the way this category works. So there's a branch of the Academy who are songwriters. They produce a short list of, I think, 15 films. And then from those 15, they nominate five. And then the full Academy, not just the music listeners or the music types, then vote on. So just for the benefit of the listeners, that's kind of how this category works. And yeah, I think you're right. That may have been at play here.
Yeah, but I need to revisit the song because I do remember enjoying it quite a bit.
yeah, and if I can just add one more thing about it's because I think this speaks to its ability to stand the test of time. In the theme parks, you know, there's this new boy band, and I'm biased here because one of my friends is a member of the boy band, but the Collective Five, they are performing in Magic Kingdom at Disney Springs, and they're doing a lot of boy band homage, and one of the songs that they frequently perform and that has become a real crowd favorite of their sets is this song, Nobody Like You. And so to see it make its way into the theme parks, again, tells me that this song is likely to have a life beyond the movie itself.
Yeah, I can appreciate the notion of that. It makes me think too, the song, I'm blanking on the exact name, but the end credit song from Wreck-It Ralph, When Will I See You Again?
Oh yeah, a perfect example, absolutely.
Paint the Night at Disney California Adventure, that was one avenue for which that song got a lot more attention. So yeah, interesting. My next, do you want to say something on that? I don't want
no,
to.
No. Okay. Go for it.
So my next pick for this category is kind of in the same realm as Cinderella, in that one song from this film was nominated, in fact, won. So I don't know if at this point in time, it seems like only one song per film could be nominated. So my pick is actually not Chim Chim Cherie, which won for Mary Poppins, but rather a different Mary Poppins song. So maybe it's not the most unfamiliar song, but it's still one that in a different context where perhaps multiple songs could have been nominated, I think it may have garnered one, and that's Feed the Birds.
Feed the birds, tuppence a bag, tuppence, tuppence.
Which I feel like in the same spirit as A Dream is a Wish Your Heart Makes is one that is so maybe not to the extent as that one, but it's so commonly played in Disney spaces, at least instrumentally, that I think it's very tethered to the notion of a Disney space, even though it has a somber tone. Unlike A Spoonful of Sugar, it still is very much reflective of the vibe of Mary Poppins, which is to bring joy to others, and the message of Feed the Birds is so beautiful, and one that Richard Sherman has talked about endlessly over the years, and in terms of how much Walt loved it and how much he loves it too, and I do as well. It's not one that maybe I chose frequently to listen to when I was a child, but as I've gone older, and particularly in the wake of the fanfare and appreciation of Saving Mr. Banks, it's one that continues to pull on my heartstrings and win me over. So I quite love Feed the Birds, and I think in a different space it would have been nominated.
Yeah, such a great choice. Again, this is one that I really thought about making one of my two, so I'm glad that you did. I think if you asked the average Mary Poppins viewer, I guess, you know, which song do you think was nominated for the Oscar from this film? I think people would be more inclined to guess Feed the Birds than they would Chim Chim Cherie, which is, of course, the one that did win the Oscar. Yeah, it is anthemic in that way. It does. Yeah, this is a song that appeals to the heavens, quite literally. Again, it's contemplating the grand, the eternal, the soul sort of caliber type questions, I guess. And so I think that's the kind of thing that we expect the Academy to nominate, but that might be more of a modern notion. I mean, you look back, a lot of sillier songs won throughout the earlier years of the Oscars, not always, but and I don't mean to say that Chim Chim Cherie is silly, but it's sillier, I guess, than something like Feed the Birds. But anyway, yeah, great pick.
Yeah, there were some oddball wins over the years by some Disney films, but mostly other out of other films and studios that are like, really? That one? Okay. But I
For
was going
sure.
to say too, in terms of the staying power of Feed the Birds and how much I love it, I didn't realize that there was a thread with my other selection, but I went to London for the first time on that same trip to Paris. And where did we go as part of our tour of the city one day? St. Paul's Cathedral. And what did I pull out on my phone once we got there? It was Feed the Birds, and you could hear the bells going off in the background too. It was bliss. So that there you have it. It's a song that I love listening to in a variety of contexts, including the most important physical setting.
So magical. I too went to London while over there and did the same thing, Brett. I was there with two of my friends, our friends, and we tried to find some birds that we could feed. I don't recall that we did, but we did sit on the steps, and we actually sang this song, and there was nobody else around. It was very late at night, and we were on the steps of St. Paul's, and what a magical experience.
Well, I'm really tickled that we had a similar experience, even though I didn't try to physically feed the birds, but doing the same thing with the listening to it. That's awesome. Are there honorable mentions that you want to pass over or pass along, share right now?
Oh my gosh, there are so many. The one that's very recent in folks' memory is We Don't Talk About Bruno, because again, the way this works is the studio will typically pick one or more songs to campaign to put into what's called a four-year consideration race. And before the song We Don't Talk About Bruno blew up and became a TikTok sensation, Disney had put its money on a different song, Dos Argüitos, I think is how it's pronounced. And so people were very upset that We Don't Talk About Bruno was not nominated. So that's one that I would say. I remember being very upset about the song Wonderkind from the Chronicles of Narnia, not being nominated back in the day. It's the Alanis Morissette song. It was nominated for a Golden Globe, but not for the Oscar. I think of Seize the Day from Newsies, I'm Still Here from Treasure Planet. I mean, there are so many I could go on and on. But relative to score, which we'll talk about later, the Academy has so frequently passed up Disney films, even in years where a Disney film was the only major movie musical. And it's surprising how often they have chosen not to at least nominate a major Disney song.
So yeah, really valid points there. A few that I'll throw out, and I enjoy all those choices that you mentioned. I instantly thought of I'll Make a Man Out of You from Mulan. But for context, what was nominated that year, we have The Prince of Egypt, Armageddon, Babe, Pig in the City, The Horse Whisperer, and Quest for Camelot, songs from all five of those films, but nothing from Mulan. There you have it.
Those were, if I caught everything you said, those were mostly animated films, right?
Prince of Egypt, Quest for Camelot, those were animated. Babe, Pig in the City was a children's film which had some puppetry and CGI. Yeah, interesting selections. Yeah, so nothing from Mulan that year. Like, and if anything, I think Reflection probably would have been one of the more obvious choices, but I still feel like I'll Make a Man Out of You is a more enjoyable song. I also went for Whistle While You Work from Snow White. It's not necessarily the best piece of music ever, but it's sure is memorable. So,
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to have seen both of those win.
no nominations on those fronts, but now we're going to shift and talk about Disney songs that should not have been nominated. So I told you at the top of this that there have been 42 Disney songs that have been nominated for Best Original Song. 14 have won. So this is as of prior to this year's Oscars. Aaron, what are some hot takes here? What are some songs that should not have won? Or excuse me, that should have not been nominated? Excuse me.
Yeah, I was gonna say this might be a hot take, Brett, because I do know a lot of people love this song, and you might love it. I don't know, so I apologize in advance if so, but I'm gonna go with My Funny Friend and Me, from The Emperor's New
Odysseus made
Groove.
his journey, and we wondered just what happened to the life we knew before the.
This was the year 2000. It was nominated. It did not win. Well, I don't know. Let me just pause and say, how do you feel about this song?
I love Sting. Sting okay. is like one of my, like, he's in the camp of, like, I love him and Phil Collins and Peter Gabriel, like folks of that era and generation. And I love his work for Emperor's New Groove. I wish the song is One Day She'll Love Me, which was one of the cut songs from Emperor's New Groove in its prior incarnation, but still left on the soundtrack. I wish that had been at least at the top of the end credits and thus been eligible, because I think that's the stronger of the strongest song that he created. Perfect World is also much catchier. That would not have been the song that I would have selected, but I do enjoy the music from that film.
Yeah, and I think that's what part of this comes down to, that just kind of rocky history of the production of this movie. You know, many of your listeners probably know the story. It was going to be a very different kind of film with a different title, when Sting was going to be much more involved than he ultimately was. And so a lot of the music is a leftover from the earlier incarnation of what ultimately became the Emperor's New Groove. And I think that's one of the things, that one of the sticking points I have here, is that it sounds like a song to me from a different movie. I think if you were to play someone this song and they'd never heard the soundtrack, they'd never seen the film, they would imagine a movie that is very different in tone than what we ultimately get with The Emperor's New Groove. And that's not really the song's fault. It's not Sting's fault. It's not the movie's fault. It's just kind of incidental to, you know, the history and the way this all played out. But it strikes me that perhaps this award was more about giving Sting an Oscar than it was recognizing a song from a film, if that makes sense. But that's my take out anyway. And I look at other songs from this year that were not recognized, and one that immediately stands out to me is actually not a Disney song, but it's from Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole Christmas, Where Are You Christmas, co-written by Mariah Carey, performed by Faith Hill, not nominated, but this one was. But anyway, that's my first pick for this category, Brett.
Interesting selection. That wasn't immediately what came to mind for me, but I do, I think I just enjoy Sting so much that I think that's sure. clouding my perspective there. So one that I'm going to go with is one that I was absolutely baffled was nominated, and that is, and preface this, I love Randy Newman, but... I can't let you throw yourself away from Toy Story 4.
I can't let you throw yourself away. Don't you want to see the sun come up each morning?
This is Forky's song that's during the kind of a montage sequence. And it's so surprising that this would have been nominated. It's not, I mean, it has a catchy Randy Newman sound to it, but Disney has not utilized it in really any context. It's not terribly memorable within the film, even though it has a little bounce to it. And it's not even, I love Randy Newman. It's not his finest singing vocal performance either. I don't think it's the best written. In the grand scheme of Randy Newman music, it's toward the bottom of the barrel, in my opinion. So what ended up winning that year was I'm Gonna Love Me Again, the original Elton John song from Rocket Man, the biopic. But this Toy Story 4 song, don't know why it was even in the mix. And I'm a huge Randy Newman fan, and I'm a huge Toy Story person, but no.
Yeah, same. And it's so funny that you picked this, because this was also my second pick for this category.
Okay, good.
And yeah, I think you said it best. The song has some bounce to it, and for that reason, it's perfectly listenable. I think it's fine as a song. That's about the most I could say for it. But yeah, it's not especially memorable as a song, and its role in the film is not especially memorable either. I don't think of this as a song that captures any particular, you know, dramatic moment or character arc. Certainly the lyrics are somewhat character specific, but to me, to listen to this, it sounds more like Toy Story pastiche than it does a Toy Story 4 specific song. I mean, you could almost drop this into any Toy Story soundtrack and, sure. and it would work because it's sort of general enough. And at the same time, it would never be the best song on any of those soundtracks. So I'm with you. It was a bit of a head scratcher as to why this one broke through. And I look at what didn't get in the mix this year. Show Yourself from Frozen 2. Now, Frozen 2 was nominated for a different selection, which I don't know, maybe will come up later. We'll see. Spirit from The Lion King. Yes, I'm advocating that the live action Lion King remake should have been an Oscar nominee.
I remember you love that one, Aaron.
I
you were on your soapbox about that one all through our conversations around that time.
You're so right. That's for those who don't remember, that's Beyonce's song that plays over the film. Stand Up, which was not a song that got a lot of attention. It's by Cynthia Erivo from the movie Harriet, which she is in, but I think it's a really stellar song. So there was a lot. It's not like they were grasping for something to nominate this year. There was a lot available to the nominators, to this branch of the Academy this year. So yeah, it's a mystery why I Can't Let You Throw Yourself Away is one of the, 42, you said, Disney songs. In the whole history of the Disney pantheon of music, this is one of the ones that got nominated.
All right. Well, so we both selected that one. Do you want to share your second pick and then I'll just share my second one?
Well, that was my second. Yeah,
oh, that so was your second funny, one. That's right. Yeah. I can't even keep track. There we go. Okay. So my other selection is in the same brand as one that I just mentioned. I love Mary Poppins and I love Mary Poppins Returns. But the song that was nominated that year, I don't think is the one that should have been nominated. It's The Place Where Lost Things Go.
Never dream or reminisce, wondering where to find what you truly miss.
Which is the kind of quiet bedtime melody, if you will. It's just not, it's pleasant and it's simple in all the right ways, but there are much stronger songs in that film. So I don't know why Disney was so gung-ho about this one in particular. At least that's my opinion. I would have gone for, A Cover Is Not the Book or more of a set piece type film, or a set piece type song, as opposed to this choir one, which ultimately doesn't stand out, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm going to say two seemingly contradictory things about this. The first is that I don't think I can remember being as furious with any other award result as I was with this one when it didn't win, because I was just so rooting for this song to win and then it didn't. And of course it had that beautiful performance by Bette Midler during the ceremony year. But that having been said, I agree with you entirely, Brett. I mean, I was furious because it was the one song from Mary Poppins Returns that had been nominated, and I wanted something from that movie to win because I loved the movie so much and all of the songs. But yeah, as you say, so aptly, a set piece song would have made more sense here. And I think it's something like Trip a Little Light Fantastic. Can You Imagine That? Nowhere to Go But Up. You mentioned A Cover Is Not the Book. I mean, there are many, many songs here that probably would have been more likely winners. But it's a shame that Mary Poppins Returns went unawarded at the Oscars.
Right. So, I mean, I think in my case, my selection of it is not by virtue of it being a bad song. I think it's a much better song than I Can't Let You Throw Yourself Away. Can't Let You Throw Yourself Away. But which is just so funny to say, but the notion of that there are sometimes these, and we'll probably continue to talk about this, there are always curious picks that somehow make the mix that aren't necessarily, like sometimes you have the standard, right? A Whole New World wins and is nominated, yeah. Or Beauty and the Beast, like that's clearly the song for that film. So that this isn't that, it doesn't always have to be a spectacular song that gets the nomination or even secures the win, but it's odd when it's one that is rather comparably not as memorable or not as well written. So that's just my two cents there.
Yeah. And wouldn't you love to be in the room for the conversation where the studio is deciding which song to put forward? And you know, it's all a matter of strategy on their part. And so they're sort of trying to pick what's going to resonate and why. And it, with a choice like this, you'd love to hear the rationale. Why did this song get the For Your Consideration campaign when so many of the others didn't?
Yeah, that's a fair point, because it is probably the studio trying to position themselves against others that they assume will be nominated or assume will be contenders. So do they want to offer like counter programming, right? So
right.
This song is very different than Shallow, which ultimately won From a Star is Born by Lady Gaga, which is very much a powerful piece that is, I mean, it's not a rock song, but it's poppy, and it's a much stronger in tone and its presence than the quieter nature of The Place Where Lost Things Go. So
yeah, it's true. And you know, let's be honest, there's probably no version of that year's Oscars where Shallow didn't win, you know, no matter what was put forward for Mary Poppins Returns. So I guess some years you got to say, yeah, it's not going to be my movie.
Yeah. Any honorable mentions for this space of Disney songs that should not have been nominated?
Dishonorable mention? I don't know. I mean, not really. You know, I mean, the song So Close from Enchanted, it was nominated, and I've never loved that song, but that really just comes down to personal preference. And I know a lot of people do love it, but I don't begrudge its nomination, really. I don't know. Do you have any?
You know, I was looking back because I think more recently I've generally agreed with a lot of the selections, except for the two very recent nominations that I just mentioned. But like Love from Robin Hood, I guess, like, I'm like, it's fine. I can totally see how The Way We Were by Marvin Hamlisch won for that year. But Love is not one that I really return to. Maybe that's my lack of connection to Robin Hood as a film. But I'm like, that would not have really entered my radar of a Disney song that warranted a nomination, but I also don't know what the other selections were for that year. So not dissing George Bruns, but it's not necessarily one that stands out to me.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by generational perspectives on the movie Robin Hood, which I do really enjoy, but I have certainly found that Disney fans who are older than either of us, Brett, who maybe were children during the 70s, and this makes a lot of sense, but are like borderline fanatical about Robin Hood. And that song in particular, I agree with you, it's not one that ever resonated with me, but I think it's also very much of a specific time. It has the sound of a 1970s ballad. And I do know that a lot of people feel very strongly about it, but yeah, it's not one that ever resonated with me.
Yeah, good points. All right, shall we transition?
Sure.
All right, Disney songs that should not have won an Oscar. So there are very few Disney, well, in the grand scheme of things, there's very few Disney songs that have won an Oscar. I think I've noted that 14 have. So it's not like there's a lot to choose from, but we're going to share some that we feel like missed it and should not have obtained the win. Shall I rip the band off first, or shall you?
Yeah, please do.
Okay. All right. So The Lion King. We have Can You Feel the Love Tonight? Which I think is a very good song, but should not have been the song to have won. In that year, Hakuna Matata and Circle of Life were also nominated. So that was a year where Disney dominated. And there were several of these instances where Disney had three of the five or two of the five nominations. And alas, it was the love song, which is pleasant and it's a fine piece of music. It's one that I enjoy playing on the piano. But I think about what is an impactful Disney song, and I would certainly go with Circle of Life any day and every day. That's my hot take.
Wow, I was going to say the takes are hot. They're steaming hot. Yeah, I mean, for me, The Lion King, it's like, how do you pick? I mean, so many killer songs. Yeah, I think if I were to pick one that I would say is like the song of that film that should get the Oscar, I would have gone with Circle of Life as well. But yeah, ooh, that's a brave pick, Brett. I imagine a lot of people having strong feelings one way or the other about it.
We're just going to see the unsubscribe numbers just increase incrementally each moment of the
I
day.
know. But that's the tough thing about this category that we're doing right now, right? Because we are robbing an awarded Disney film of its Oscar, and that's not a position you ever relish being in.
Well, and one has to wonder in those years where there were multiple nominations from one film, Enchanted was another illustration of that. You mentioned that earlier with So Close, and That's How You Know, and Happy Working Song. All three of those lost ultimately, and but point is, I wonder if there was almost some splitting of the votes by virtue of where people put their attention. And in Enchanted's case, maybe it cost it. I think, what was it, Dreamgirls won that year. Or no, it was one Falling Slowly from Once won in 2007. But in the case of Lion King, it's like, I wonder if Circle of Life just barely didn't get it. So who knows?
Yeah, it's a shame when the split vote thing happens. You mentioned Dreamgirls, and the same thing happened with Dreamgirls. I think it had three songs nominated, and then it lost the category, despite being clearly kind of the leading movie musical of that year.
That's right, that was the
And there
prior
again,
year.
that, yeah, and that's so often, I think, especially these days, that now having happened a few times, part of the studio's calculus in deciding what to put forward. You saw that with, for example, Encanto, we mentioned earlier, they did not campaign for, we don't talk about Bruno or anything else for that because I think they were concerned about we don't want more than one song to get nominated because it could rob us of a win.
Yeah, good point. Okay. All right. I'm not the only one who can be offering some hot takes. So what's your selection?
Yeah, okay, gosh, this is a tough one, and I don't want to get too heavy here. I'm gonna say Zippity
My,
Doo-dah.
oh my, what a wonderful day. Plenty of sunshine in my way.
From
Zippity-doo-dah,
Song of the South,
zippity-ay,
1946.
Mr.
It's tough because there
Bluebird's
is
on
so
my
much to
shoulder.
love about this
It's the
song
truth.
musically.
It's actual.
Its
Everything
impact
satisfactory.
historically, culturally is undeniable. Its status as one of the anthems of the Walt Disney Company until very recently also has been undeniable. But I think it goes without saying that the movie Song of the South has a complex legacy, and I don't think we need to recount or digest that necessarily here today. But this song's origins are at least as thorny as the movies are, and its origins are in minstrelsy, in blackface, in what was prior to the song's creation, racist lampooning of Black Americans, and some of those musical traditions rather inspired very directly the composition of this song. And listen, it was a different time, and I know this is part of the conversation we have around so much of Disney art these days, right? And I don't mean to suggest that it is easy for any of us to take a reductive or a myopic view of any particular piece of art from another time, nor that we should. I think there is or can be nuance in the way that we gauge and celebrate and or criticize problematic works from the past. But suffice it to say, we would not award this song an Oscar today for those very reasons. So if I am in the position, as I now find myself, thanks to this episode, of revoking an Oscar from one of the few Disney wins, I think for those reasons I would go with this one. What
Okay.
are you going to rob of an Oscar next?
Oh, I'm gonna go back to Randy Newman. Love him. Love Randy. We Belong Together from Toy Story 3. Not his finest song, and ultimately not the finest set of
Can't
selections
tell
from
me I'm not the
2010.
one. Don't you tell me I ain't no fun. Just tell me you love me like I love you. You know you do.
Where I would have much rather seen Alan Menken and Glenn Slater take home I See the Light for Tangled, from Tangled. We Belong Together, it's a fine end credit song. And it's just that, it's an end credit song. It doesn't drive the narrative of the story. We can have good end credit songs, but this one is it's enjoyable and it has a nice bounciness to it, as you would imagine, with it being a Randy Newman piece. He got an Oscar a decade earlier for If I Didn't Have You from Monsters, Inc. I'd much rather listen to that song any day than We Belong Together. So it's one that is kind of a question mark why it was nominated and won, but it did. And good for Randy. I appreciate his work. I appreciate his scores a lot more than some of his songs, but this one just doesn't feel like it should have garnered a win here.
Yeah, Brett, once again, you and I are united
And hating Randy
in
Newman, apparently.
apparently. No, I agree with you. His win for was it a win or just a nomination for Monsters, Inc.?
He won it, actually.
Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Entirely deserved. But yeah, this one, We Belong Together. And you first of all, it beat At Last I See the Light, right? I See the Light from Tangled. Enough said right there. Like that should have been the winner for this year. So that's unfortunate. I would say that not only is this not the most memorable Toy Story song, this is not even the most memorable song of the 2000s called We Belong Together. That would go to Mariah Carey's much bigger hit, We Belong Together. I will say I think this is better than I Can't Let You Throw Yourself Away from Toy
Yes.
Story 4. But at the same time, it also sounds kind of just like it. Like I get these two songs mixed up in my memory. So yeah, not a great win.
Are there other honorable mentions of songs, or is very few to choose from, right? Because only 14 have garnered a win.
Yeah, the only other selections here that I would take something away from would just be to give them to a different song from the same movie. For example, Under the Sea from The Little Mermaid, I might have nominated and recognized Part of Your World
Yes.
instead. But yeah, those are the only other things I would look to. How about you?
I actually would have made the same call. I feel like Under the Sea is the set piece, but Part of Your World is the soul. And
Well said.
that's where I'm always curious why Kiss the Girl was the other one nominated, when ultimately that wouldn't be in my top three Little Mermaid songs, but that's just me. So
Yeah.
all right, the fourth of our five categories here is share Disney songs that should have won the Oscar. So here we're thinking about Disney songs that were nominated but did not win. So what's first up for you?
Okay, well, you know me, Brett, so this might not surprise you, but my first choice is The Age of Not Believing from Bedknobs and
You're at
Broomsticks.
the age of not believing, and worst of all, you doubt yourself. You're a castaway where no one hears you, on a barren isle in a lonely sea,
But I will say that this one is tough
where the
because
all the
this was
happy endings
1971
go,
and it was nominated,
where
but it
can all the
lost
good times
to the
be?
theme from Shaft.
You must
And
face
that
the
was
age of
probably
not
the more
believing,
interesting win
doubting
and perhaps even the
everything
more
that's
deserving win
within
at
you.
the time. Because the theme from Shaft was really barrier breaking in its day. It was risque, it was envelope pushing, both lyrically and sonically, but also may have been perceived as more envelope pushing than it would have been had it been written or performed by a white artist or had it been about a white character. But this was trailblazing in that, I think, is it Isaac Hayes, I believe, became the first black person to win the Best Song Oscar with this song. There was a legendary performance that is the stuff of, like Oscar's legend, where there was like a chain vest involved in the performance that year. I don't want to take anything away from the theme from Shaft, is what I'm saying here. But I also think that it is a song, and those achievements were very much of a historical moment, right? They're very sort of pinned to the 1970s. Over time, the theme from Shaft has taken on a different legacy. It tends to be the stuff of parody these days, if it's referenced at all, because it is so unique or so specific, rather, to the 1970s. Whereas The Age of Not Believing is a very timeless song, it's very instrumental to the story being told. Where I will settle is this. I won't say that The Age of Not Believing should have won instead of the theme from Shaft. I will just say that I wish in the abstract that it were an Oscar-winning song. So that's my first pick.
Yeah, and you can't go wrong with the Sherman Brothers. And actually, that's a film, too, where there probably could have been a number of good selections from Bedknobs and Broomsticks that are standouts. But that probably is my favorite of Bedknobs and Broomsticks. I can appreciate that selection. So my next pick is Candle on the Water from Pete's Dragon. Which we've talked about because we had the conversation about folks who have contributed Disney music and should be Disney legends, and we talked about Helen Reddy. You also know that I don't love Pete's Dragon as a film, but I do love the music, and I think the song is stellar, and it's a heartbreaking song. It's all about longing for someone, and it's just an iconic performance, and the set piece is great. It's well shot. It's well written. It's a great piece of music, and that's from 1977. So Joel Hirshhorn and Al Kasha, music and lyrics there. And we also talked about their contributions in Epcot in the early days too. But what won that year? You Light Up My Life from the film of the same name. Never heard of it. Apparently it was widely panned. And there were some other interesting songs that were nominated that year that I actually have heard of. So we have Someone's Waiting for You from The Rescuers, Nobody Does It Better, another Marvin Hamlisch piece of music from The Spy Who Loved Me, and also a song from The Slipper and the Rose that was written by the Sherman Brothers. But alas, none of those won. Pete's Dragon, Candle in the Water, I feel like it should have garnered an Oscar.
I'm so glad to hear you say that, Brett. It's unsurprisingly, I guess, I completely agree. This was also my choice. It's my second choice. Yeah. We have a lot of overlap in our selections. But, this is one of my all-time favorite, not just Disney songs, but songs, period. I mean, I think of it as a true masterpiece in terms of the musical composition, the way that the notes cascade like a wave, yes. The way that they kind of move up and down the scale in a way that mimics musically the motion of the lighthouse, the beam of light that's moving behind Nora. The lyrics are so poetic. I love the way that it is simultaneously specific to story and character, but also very universal in terms of what it speaks to in the human experience. And I think that's the hallmark of great songwriting and certainly musical, theatrical songwriting. This is one of the all-time greats. It thrills me to no end just to be able to say that it was nominated, because so often Peach Dragon and Bedknobs and Broomsticks are a little overlooked in the shadow of Mary Poppins. But I love that we can say that in the entire 1970s, I believe it is true that only three Disney songs were nominated at the Oscars in that entire decade. And it was The Age of Not Believing from Bedknobs, Candle on the Water from Peach Dragon, and then, as you mentioned, the song from The Rescuers. And so I think that it speaks to the salience of these movies, that they were able to break through into sort of the zeitgeist at a time when the Disney studio was ailing and not reaching the culture in the way that it had in the past. I'm pleased to see that it will be remembered as a nominee, but agree that it absolutely should have been a winner.
Yeah, and you made a good point about a song that where there's a universal quality to it and that it can transcend the film. That's, I think, also the mark of a great song, where it's not only memorable within the context of the film, but where it will be performed in a wide variety of venues because of its impact and resonance with folks. So I think that's one that, I mean, it's maybe not, at least among our generation or younger, where people would pick that up in the same way they would out there. But it's still one that I think is a great selection for someone who has a good range and and can demonstrate that touching quality. So I love that song. And another one that I felt should have won the Oscar but did not is Into the Unknown from Frozen 2. Which is probably my favorite Disney song of the past 5 years and maybe even the past decade, because it's just so incredibly sung by Idina Menzel. Everybody knew that leading up to Frozen 2 that the Lopez's were going to have an absolute hit. I mean, how could you follow up Let It Go with something else that's right. a smash? And I would say Into the Unknown is a better song. It's It's driving. It's really wonderfully composed, and there's the ethereal echoing in the background, which I love. And it brings a smile on my face whenever I hear it. And it's one that I'm still surprised didn't have the same cultural sensation or was a phenomenon in the same way as Let It Go. But nonetheless, people still enjoy it. It lost to the song from Rocket Man that I alluded to earlier, which I haven't thought of beyond the film, which, and I enjoy Elton John, but I'm like, that's another one where they just wanted to bring him to the Oscars. No dissing to Elton John, but he's written far better than the one that got the Oscar. So Into the Unknown should have won the Oscar, in my opinion.
Yeah, this was on my list of honorable mentions. I totally agree with you. I'm curious though, Brett, you know, I've heard people say that Show Yourself should have been the song put forward. And how do you feel about that? If you were in the position to not only nominate, but give the win to a song from Frozen 2, and you weren't limited to just the songs that were actually nominated, what would you give it to?
I would still give it to Into the Unknown. Okay. It's interesting because I know I think Show Yourself has proven in my experience or in my conversations with folks and my reading of articles, it's polarizing. I think people either love it or really dislike it. I haven't seen so much in the middle of the camp, and I don't know why there's such distaste for it, because I think it's still really incredibly sung and powerful, and it's really a reflection song, if you will. But it, for me, I would go for the, and it's a showstopper too, right? It's almost like you're aiming to have two part of your worlds in one film. I think maybe that's what compromised it somewhat. It's just not that it's duplicative, but the tenor of it feels very much, and not tenor in the musical sense, but the tone of it feels very similar in terms of just the type of song it's trying to be. I don't know. What's your read on the situation?
Well, I love both songs, but I agree with you. If I were to pick one, I think Into the Unknown really emerges as the iconic piece of music from that film and the more Oscar friendly, so to speak. And as I say, it was on my list of alternates. And I'm curious, Brett, do you have any other honorable mentions here for Disney songs that should have won the Oscar?
Hard to say. It's not. Belle. I prefer Belle to Beauty and the Beast, but it makes sense why it didn't win, because Beauty and the Beast is the not only the signature song in the film, but it also had such an afterlife because of Celine Dion and that performance, and rightfully so. So it had more going for it, I think, but Belle is one of my favorite, if not favorite, opening songs for a Disney movie, because of it encapsulating so much within a five six minute period. You totally know who she is as a protagonist. You get a sense of the setting that she's in, the challenges that she's facing, and it provides such a wonderful foundation for a masterpiece. And I think there was never any possibility that that could have won, but I still would choose that any day over Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, I agree. Belle is the better song. you know, my beloved Angela Lansbury was so gratified by the win for True. Beauty and the Beast that I would be loath to disturb it for her sake alone. But I do agree with you, if I'm ranking the songs from Beauty and the Beast, that Belle is the better song. And that's another one of those tricky situations where multiples were nominated, rightfully so, and thankfully did not cancel out the movie altogether.
Yeah, very good point. And yeah, and then the tie into Angela Lansbury from earlier with your choice of Age of Not Believing should have
won
the win. So, you know, we know who's in our club of favorite people. And let the record show, Randy Newman is in my club of favorite people, even though we both dissed him twice. So
I know. And twice you have challenged an Elton John selection here, I notice.
That's true. But at least I didn't diss Beyonce. So I didn't say anything badly about her tonight. So
yeah, you're safe from the beehive tonight.
Okay, fair enough. All right, so now we have our last category. So we're changing from songs to scores. And so I asked you and myself to think of Disney scores, musical scores that should have been nominated. So they were not nominated at all. Where did you go with this?
So I will say at the outset, I do not in my day-to-day life walk around with the same amount of historical data about this category in my memory as I do the best original song. So when I sat down to do this, I started searching, well, what has been nominated? And I was pleased to find that there for a while, every movie that was coming to mind is, oh, this score should be recognized. I would look and see, oh, sure enough, it has been recognized. And in general, the studio has done pretty well in this category. A number of their films have been nominated over the years. But I did come up with a relatively small list of scores that have been very impactful to me that were not nominated. And from those, I've landed on two that I'll pick for the sake of our discussion today. And again, perhaps unsurprisingly, because you know me, Brett, I'm going to go with first Hocus Pocus,
yes.
Scored by John Debney and in small part, of course, James Horner.
You want to say more? We're both in the John Debney fan club, clearly. So,
of course, guest of your show, John Debney. You know, this to me, and I've written at length about this score specifically. I think it's one of the all-time great film scores, like full stop. I don't limit that to Disney. I don't limit it to Halloween. I don't limit it to the 1990s. When I think of the all-time great film scores, this is up there for me. It's so incredibly sophisticated and layered in terms of the vocal choruses that are at play, the range of the instrumentation, the pivot from sort of sweeping, heart-wrenching kind of music to, you know, the adventure and peril, and these great dynamics that are at play in the course of the score. It's remarkable. And then on top of that, to know the story of its creation, that, you know, this until then untapped young composer came in to save a movie at the last minute, to compose his first film score, and to come up with this in a matter of, I think it was mere days or weeks, I don't recall offhand, but it's an incredible story, to say nothing of the outcome, which itself is, again, I think one of the best ever composed.
I wholeheartedly agree, and that's why it's on my list as well. I'm still waiting for him to get his Disney Legend Award. I can't remember if I told him directly that when I spoke with him, but like, talk about someone who has not only offered a great deal of quantity to the studio and the company overall over four decades plus, but also quality. And I would say this is his finest piece of work for Disney movies, at least. But more than that, it's bewitching. It's fun, it's emotionally resonant, and it's one that even long prior to me interviewing him, which was just a dream guest, it was one that I would listen to all the time. And it also stands as one of only a handful of scores that I have a vinyl record of as well, because I love listening to it so much. But I, you know, we both are huge fans of his and his work, and it also is a year where it never would have been nominated because of, one, the film being a huge box office flop, unfortunately, at the time. But the films of the day that were nominated for Best Original Score were either huge musicals or powerful dramas or huge box office hits. So what won that year? Schindler's List. What was nominated? The Age of Innocence with Michelle Pfeiffer, The Firm, great Tom Cruise film, The Fugitive with Harrison Ford, and The Remains of the Day. So some great scores, mind you, but I don't think there ever would have been a chance for Hocus Pocus to have been nominated, unfortunately. But people have grown to love the score over the years, which is such a benefit.
Yeah, I would love if there were some way to sort of talk to the voters of 1993 today and inquire whether any of them would be inclined to say, like, yeah, I would go back and change my vote if I could, knowing now that Hocus Pocus as a score heralded the arrival of one of Hollywood's great and most successful and most prolific film composers to come. And I think that kind of view is obviously not available to a voter ever, right? Because you never know what a legacy is going to become. But it just seems to me that it's the kind of thing that were not only John Debney's legacy, but for that matter, the movie Hocus Pocus, its legacy, perhaps would prompt some people to look back and reconsider today. But you're right, in 1993, this is just not the kind of movie that even would have been or was taken seriously.
Yeah, but thankfully people have revisited and enjoyed the film, as you've written about at length. So I would be really disappointed if in the coming years that John Debney does not at least get a Disney Legend Award. I just feel like he's so deserving. And considering some of the folks who have become Disney Legends, who you know, who I do not believe should have been named as Disney Legends, it's baffling that he hasn't yet, given his wealth of great work. So,
yeah, to me, it's a question of when, not if. And I think we've seen them kind of, you know, bringing in a Hocus Pocus person here and there. I think it's inevitable, and rightly so, that John Debney will become a Disney Legend. So I totally agree. But okay, so that was both of our first picks, right, Brett? So what's your next choice?
Next choice here is, and there will be some honorable mentions, but I'm going to go with Atlantis, The Lost Empire by James Newton Howard. Which James Newton Howard had three smash scores in a row for Disney. Actually, four if you include The Sixth Sense for Hollywood Pictures. So he had that in 99, Dinosaur in 2000, Atlantis in 2001, and then Treasure Planet in 2002. I'd say that's a really great run of contributions to the Walt Disney Company. And Atlantis in particular has just a really excellent score, one that is just great orchestration, very epic in its scale, because that's what the movie was trying to accomplish. The submarine is one of the more signature tracks, which also encompasses the main theme that's just really very much reflective of what an epic of the 50s or 60s would have been, but here it's an animated form. It's an incredible score. It's one that also has some interesting kind of world music elements by virtue of the city of Atlantis and Kida. James Newton Howard just delivered on all fronts here, but this was the same year that we had these films garner nominations. You had Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, which won. Mm-hmm. AI, Artificial Intelligence, that's John Williams. A Beautiful Mind, James Horner. Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone by John Williams. And then Monsters, Inc. by Randy Newman. Thank goodness Monsters, Inc. was nominated, because then you would have been hearing about that. because I actually love Randy Newman's score for that. But Atlantis, it would never have been nominated, because the film was not the success Disney wanted, had hoped it would be. And it's a really stellar score. It's one that I listen to very frequently. So I'm off my soapbox now.
Well, I'm glad the conversation did not end without Randy Newman's redemption. So you redeemed him there. You know, Brett, you have inspired me to spend some time with this score because it's not one that I can really, I guess I haven't spent a lot of time with Atlantis. I mean, I've seen it a handful of times and I can't really recall it in my mind right now, but I think this is inspiring and instructive because not only am I going to go listen to it as a score, as a soundtrack, which I don't know that I've ever done before. But now you've given me some specific things to listen to, such as the incorporation of world music and that sort of thing, and the spirit of adventure. Certainly, James Newton Howard, a great period of time for him in the studio. You mentioned Treasure Planet, and that's one that was on my list of alternates here.
Oh, great.
So thanks so much for inspiring what will be perhaps my drive time music later this evening. I have a little bit of drive ahead of me, so. I think I'll listen to that.
Yeah, it's a good. I think it's the best of his Disney scores. There are specific tracks from Dinosaur and Treasure Planet that I think are strong, but I think collectively Atlantis is his masterclass, but or his major feat. But any alternates for you besides Treasure Planet?
Well, I think I still have my second.
Oh, that's right. You do have your second. Okay, please. Yes.
Well, I think I switched the order up on us accidentally, okay. So that's my mistake. But for my last one, you know, there were so many I could have chosen here, and I just kind of picked one of many strong contenders, and that is Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl.
Yeah.
Composed by Klaus Badelt. Am I saying that correctly?
Yep. Do you know?
Yeah, and produced, the music producer here was Hans Zimmer, and I'm a little fuzzy on the origin story here. I think it was a sort of a Hocus Pocus-like situation where Hans Zimmer was tapped for the project. It was kind of starting it and then didn't have the availability for it, and so he pointed to someone he had worked with who was kind of an up-and-comer. And boy, did he deliver. I mean, this is such a memorable score, such an exciting score. I mean, it's just an instant mood. You put on the soundtrack really of any of these Pirates of the Caribbean films, but for me, particularly The Curse of the Black Pearl, and I'm just instantly transported. I'm on a musical ride, and it's just incredibly exciting. And the tracks are distinctive. I mean, this is a, I don't know if my phraseology is correct here, but this is a score soundtrack that I can put on where each track is discernible to me, not only as like a musical cue, but as a song, so to speak, as an instrumental song. And that's not always true even of some great scores. And so for that reason, among others, I went with Pirates of the Caribbean.
Great. Yeah, I could see that definitely being a contender. That year, it looks like the third Lord of the Rings film won. Big Fish, Cold Mountain, Finding Nemo, and House of Sand and Fog were the other nominees. I think it's a shame that none of the Pirates films have been nominated for an Oscar for original score because they are really smashing. So.
Yeah, it's surprising, really. You mentioned Finding Nemo there. That was one of the first movies that came to mind when I started thinking about this category. I was glad to see that it was nominated because I almost like the score to Finding Nemo more than I like the movie itself. It's an incredible score. You mentioned Big Fish. That's one of the all-time great scores in my mind, too. Stellar year at a crowded field that year.
So any other honorable mentions besides Treasure Planet?
Yeah, one that comes to mind for sure. I almost picked this one. Something Wicked This Way Comes, 1983, James Horner, whose score was not the first score. There was a whole other darker score that was composed for the film, and the studio intervened and said, no, we need something lighter and more fantastical. And both scores have been made available commercially at different points in time. I think the alternate score is now out of print, sadly. But James Horner's score is just so, again, transportive. There's this haunting leitmotif that is, to me, kind of the signature of the film. So if anyone wants to check out the soundtrack for Something Wicked This Way Comes. The reason I really want to mention it here is that just, I think, this month, Entrada, which is a specialty record label that has done expanded score releases for a number of Disney films and other studios as well, just re-released their long out-of-print, fully expanded Something Wicked This Way Comes soundtrack on CD, and it's available for, I believe, a limited time. My copy just arrived. I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, but it's worth mentioning in the course of this conversation.
Well, that's exciting. You know, I'm not very familiar with that film, but I would imagine James Horner, especially of that era, that's probably quite good. So I'll need to listen to that in some capacity.
Yeah, absolutely. And then others, you know, Luca really stood out to me for its score here just in the last couple of years. Onward, looking back at Walt era Peter Pan, so many of the Walt era animated classics were nominated in this category. And so it's strange that Peter Pan's one of the few that was not. And I think its score is especially notable. I think of, I don't know if we're counting Marvel, but Avengers Endgame of the whole MCU, that and Black Panther stand out to me. Black Panther was nominated, but Avengers Endgame was not. And then there's a whole run of Michael Giacchino Pixar films that were not nominated, at least if I'm correct here. I think The Incredibles, Inside Out, Coco. I mean, they were nominated elsewhere at the Oscars, but not for this category. And that is surprising to me because all three of those that I just named, I think, have really incredible scores.
Yeah, no, I can totally agree with you there. I didn't even think of Avengers Endgame, but I love that score. It's my favorite Marvel score. Mm-hmm. Also on my list of honorable mentions, Tron, the original by Wendy
Carter. Oh, yeah.
Which was such a departure from, I think, anything that most people had heard of, because there was such limited use of electronic music until the late 70s, early 80s. And that... it was nominated, the film was nominated for sound and costume design. So glad it got some recognition there. Not the finest piece of cinema, but technically really great. And the score is just really unique. But what won that year? E.T. So everything, all good. I agree with you with, it's surprising that The Incredibles wasn't nominated, because that is one of Giacchino's better or best pieces of music. There's so many films that I wish could have been recognized for their scores, but again, with generally for the past few decades, it's just been five nominees per year. So there you have it. Final reflections, Aaron. We've gone through a lot of different pieces of music here.
Well, you know, it's just the Disney music library is so rich, and there's more that we would like to see recognized than ever could be. And ultimately, an Oscar nomination and an Oscar win is just one of many metrics by which we can gauge the legacy of a particular artistic work in the film arena. But I would just say I have so enjoyed this discussion. I have a whole list of things to listen to anew coming out of it today, with Atlantis right at the top. So I'm so glad that we did it. This was a lot of fun.
Well, and I think I'm right there with you. I think Something Wicked This Way Comes, that's gonna be next on my listening docket, and because I'm sure there's some snippets online that I can check out.
I did see the full score apparently is on YouTube. I did see that.
Oh, great. Okay. So I'll listen to that and get back to you. Yeah, I enjoyed this too. It was a good, this is an episode I had been wanting to craft for a while, and I'm glad to have a good partner in crime here who was willing to dish some hot takes, and hopefully Randy Newman will accept our apologies for multiple times. Yeah, go ahead.
What's the Randy Newman equivalent of the beehive? They're going to be after us.
Yeah, I don't know. But you know what? People can be fantastic in their craft and still have some duds, but we still love them. And that's okay.
It's true.
That's what we learned today. Even composers don't always have their best scores. Aaron, before we wrap up, how can listeners follow you online, and can you give us a tease of a really cool book project that you are connected to that will be debuting in a matter of months?
Yeah, sure. I think what you're referring to is the official oral history of Hocus Pocus. It's a book called Witches Run Amok, and it is coming later this year from Disney Publishing. And it's principally a collection of interviews with the cast and crew, the folks who made Hocus Pocus, and also a small number of folks who can have been a part of the film's legacy in some way or who can speak to its cultural impact. And I'm so pleased and honored to be among the individuals interviewed in that latter group. And so I'll be a part of the book, and that'll be available to everyone. Later this year. And I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be an important part of this thing that's been happening for some time now, where history is writing itself, and the critical rejection of Hocus Pocus that for so long marred the film's legacy is being written anew. And I think this book's going to be an important milestone in that.
Aptly said, very well said. Social media wise, if people want to follow your work, your
I'm
life, which
on
is very fun.
Well, thanks so much for saying that. I don't know how true it is, but I'll take it. You can follow me on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it. That's at Aaron Wallace, or on Instagram, where I'm maybe a little more active these days, at Aaron H. Wallace. And you can find everything that I do on my website, which is aaronwallaceonline.com.
Such a pleasure to have you on again, my friend. Thank you for this conversation and sharing some really great selections.
Likewise. Thanks so much, Brett.
Thanks again for joining me on another episode of Notably Disney. I invite you to subscribe to the podcast and leave a review. Follow me on Twitter at bnachmanreports. That's BNACHMAN reports. And be among the first to find out about the release of new episodes. I also encourage you to send me an email to notablydisney@gmail.com regarding your thoughts of the show, as well as suggestions for content. So until we turn the page on another chapter, I'm Brett, and thanks for listening to Notably Disney. Notably Disney is not affiliated with the Walt Disney Company or any of its subsidiaries. Consequently, the perspectives and opinions expressed by the host and guests are strictly theirs and do not represent the views of the Walt Disney Company and its employees. The main purpose of the Notably Disney podcast is to offer information and critiques about the Walt Disney Company.